On the top of Chaf Hei Amud Beis, and the Mishnah back on Chaf Beis Amud Beis said that Yorad Litbol B'Mikvah, and the question is, can he read Kriyat Shema when he's naked inside the waters of the Mikvah? The Mishnah establishes him Yochel Lalos V'Liskasos V'Likros Kriyat Shema Shelo Teneitz Hachama. The Shir is that if he can get dressed, dry himself, get dressed before Hanetz, then Yala, that's what he has to do, Vizkasa. But if he's in a pressured situation, it's urgent, it's almost Hanetz Achama, and he wants to recite Kriyat Shema before Hanetz, Yizkasa B'mayim V'yikra. He's allowed to read Kriyat Shema because the water of the mikveh is covering his body. Now back on Daf Tes Amud Beis, there was a machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua about when is the time for Kriyat Shema, the latest time for Kriyat Shema Shel Shachris. Rabbi Eliezer was of the opinion that it's Ad Hanetz Hachamav. Rabbi Yeshua says Ad Shalosh Shos. Islema, Tana, Stoma, Ki Rabbi Eliezer. It seems that our Mishnah, which sets up the Shir, how long will it take him to get dressed? Would he be able to finish getting dressed before Hanetz Hachamav? That reflects the Shita Rabbi Eliezer, the Omar, Ad Hanetz Hachamav, that Kriyat Shema has to be recited no later than Hanetz. And it would seem that therefore Halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer. And we don't know that the Halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer, but the Gemara probably is just trying to clarify that would it be, you know, theoretically possible that the Mishnah would reflect the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer, which would mean that we have like a kind of a, you know, a machlokas yachkastam Mishnah ki Rabbi Eliezer. It could be possible that whenever the Gemara says lema tnan stoma ki so and so, what the Gemara means to ask is the halacha is not like so and so. So how do we interpret our Mishnah in a way that it could be reconciled with the halacha? If the halacha is not like Rabbi Eliezer, then how are we going to interpret our Mishnah? And we want to reconcile the Mishnah with Rabbi Yoshua's Shita that Kriyat Shema could be read Ad Shalosh Shos. So the Gemara answers, Afilu Tame Rabbi Yoshua. We could reconcile that Mishnah with Rabbi Yoshua Dilma Ki Vasikin, that even though Rabbi Yoshua allows you 3 hours, but Vasikin is of course the best way of doing it. Those who are Machaveves HaMitzvah and the Machmir, they want to read Kriyat Shema right before Hanetz HaChamah to synchronize Kriyat Shema with Shmona Esrei and fulfill the mitzvah of Yera'ucha im Shemesh. Diyomer Rav Yochanan Vasikin, or you go over and Osa, they would complete Kriyat Shema Manetz HaChamah, and then they would daven Shmona Esrei. Aval Shar B'nei Yodim Korin Ad Shalosh Shos. If you're not one of the Vasikin, then you'll read Kriyat Shema up till but not beyond the third hour. But the Mishnah, nevertheless, for the sake of the Vasikin, sets up a shir in which they were matir, reciting Kriyat Shema while he's in the waters. And the question I wonder is, where, how is he going to be so megula tefillah and fulfill Vasikin if he's inside the mikvah? I don't exactly understand that. Tzarech im. Is he going to daven Shmona Esrei immediately after Kriyat Shema in the mikvah? Or is there some sort of kiyum of him Hanetz HaChamah, even if he's not going to immediately recite Shmona Esrei? In any event, the Mishnah back on Daf Chaf Beis says v'im lav, if he doesn't have enough time to get dressed, dry himself, get dressed until Hanetz HaChamah will pass, then yiskasa v'mayim v'yikra. So the Gemara is upset about this because hare libo roesa erva. The Gemara now assumes that you're not allowed to read Kriyat Shema if your lev sees the erva. In other words, if there's no hefsek between the heart and the genital area, then you cannot read Kriyat Shema. And the basis for this principle of Einav Roas at Erva is not based on Re'iyah per se. It doesn't matter whether he sees the Erva or he doesn't see the Erva. It's rather based on the possibility of seeing the Erva. Even a blind person, if he's naked, it would also be Libo Roas at Erva. And let's say, for example, someone closes his eyes and his erva is exposed, that would also be re'iyah. Perhaps closing your eyes could be helpful as far as someone else, if somebody else is naked, but if you yourself are naked, then it's roa esa erva. And this is all clarified in our Chaim Siman Ayin Hey in the laws of Kriyat Shema and the Mishnah Berurah, the Yosef Katan Chav Zayin. But in any event, there's a din that you don't read Kriyat Shema if there's Erva Magula, if there's exposed Erva. And this is based on a pasuk which we'll soon see. In any event, the Gemara now is bothered. How is it possible that Yiskasa B'mayim V'yikra, the water is transparent, and therefore it's Libo Roesa Erva? It's interesting. Even though the lave itself is also submerged in the water together with the Erva, it's still considered Libo Roesa Erva. As far as his eyes are concerned, meaning Einov Roesa Erva, that's not a problem here because his goof is in the water and his eyes are outside the water, his head is outside the water, and the Mayim serve as a chatzitza between his eyes and the Erva. The problem here is Libo Roesa Erva. And as far as the eyes are concerned, despite the fact that the water is transparent, nevertheless, it is not a problem of Libo Roesa Erva. Omer Rabbi Lozar ve'itema Rav Acha bar Abba bar Acha mishum Rabbeinu b'mayim achurim shanu. The Mishnah is talking about where the water is not transparent and he can cover his body with the water that are achurim, that kind of filthy water with dust and dirt in it, the domu ki ara smichta. And then in that case, the status of the water is like karka. You know, it's, he's really covered up and therefore it's Lo yira libo ervoso. His lave does not see the erva because the water that he's submerged in is polluted water, so to speak. Again, you have to assume the water is not smelly. It doesn't have a bad odor to it. Tana Rabbana, we learned in a brisa, in the case of a tovel, b'mayim tzlulim, the water is transparent. And now it's getting pressured. It's time for the Sof Zman Kriyat Shema. Is Yeshiv Bohen Ad Savoro Vikore. According to the Tanakhama here, he's allowed to read Kriyat Shema under these urgent circumstances, pressing circumstances, if he is covered by the water up until his neck. And he reads Kriyat Shema. Yesh Omrim Ochron Baraglo. But the second opinion here in the Braisa is Machmir requires that he sort of takes his foot and shakes around the ground in front of him until the Mayim, instead of being Tzlulim, which means transparent, they become Achurim, which means they become dirty water. So the Gemara now wants to know, V'tanakama v'ari libo roesa erva, what would the Tanakama say about Mayim Tzlulim? If the water is transparent, it's Libo Roesa Erva. How is he allowed to read Kriyat Shema? Because some apparently Tanakama holds Libo Roesa Erva Mutter, that the lave seeing the Erva is okay. So again, as far as the Einayim are concerned, he has a Chatzitza because his head is outside the water. But as far as his lave is concerned, there's no Chatzitza between his lave and his Erva, and therefore he's allowed to read Kriyat Shema. And the question is, why is Libo Roesa Erva Mutter? Now, in order to clarify that, let's just read one more line in the Gemara. The Gemara asks the following kasha on the Tanakama Vare Akeva Roesa Erva. His heel of his foot is seeing the Erva. Kosovar Akeva Roesa Erva Mutter. Now, it's interesting. The Gemara thinks that Akeva Roesa Erva is more chamur than Libo Roesa Erva. And the answer to that is because in the case of Akevo, he's putting his heel all the way up to his genital area, right below it perhaps, but it's very close to the Erva, and that's called Roesa Erva. Later the Gemara is going to discuss the case where his Akeva actually has contact with his Erva. But in the case of Libo, there's a distance between the lave and the erva. This is, the belly is in between, you know, the whole abdomen area. And the Gemara therefore thinks that Akeva Roesa Erva is even more chamur than Libo Roesa Erva. Itmar, Akeva Roesa Erva Mutter. So Akeva means the heel of his foot. And he's absolutely naked between the heel of his foot and his genital area. and yet he's allowed to read Kriyat Shema. Okay? However, Nogea, if he bends his foot in such a way that his heel is touching his erva, then we have a machlokes between Abai Varov. Abai Omer Asur. Abai says it's like he's touching his erva with his hand, even though he's only touching it with his genital, with his heel. For Rava Omar Mutter. And Rava says it's Mutter. So it could be that the reason why Abaye prohibits reading Kriyat Shema in the case of Akevo Roes Erva is because he might come to touch his Erva with his hand. So these debates are about how far we should go in the case of Erva. Should we go as far as to say that even Akevo, if it's in contact with his Erva, that itself is like he's holding his Erva and he's not allowed to read Kriyat Shema in such things. So Rav Svid Masni Leilaha Shmaiti Tohachi, the previous Gemara, the presentation of the Machlokas Abai Rav, that was transmitted by Rav Svid. However, Rav Chinina Bered Rav Ika, he had a different transmission, Masni Leilaha. Here's the way he learned it. Nogea, if his heel is in direct contact with his private parts, then even Rava says you're not allowed to read Kriyat Shema. In other words, basically the way the poskim have it, any part of your body any organ in the body that's in contact with your direct contact with your erva, that's already an iser for Kriyat Shema. You're not allowed to read Kriyat Shema. The machlokas abai for Rava is in the case where the akev is bent upwards, but it's not touching the erva. It's roeh. It only is close enough to see the erva. I mean, there's no hefsek between his heel and his erva. Abai omer asur, v'rava mutter. Abai says it's asur because again, if it's an example of roeh sa erva. And not only is it roeh sa erva, but it's very close to the erva because he's lifting up his foot. He bends his leg in such a way that his heel is all the way up to the erva. It's just not touching the erva. Sabai says that's asur, and Rava says mutar. Why? Shelo nitna Torah lemalachei asharis. In other words, the human body was constructed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu with an erva, so it's very difficult to imagine that we could make sure that no part of the body would be seeing the erva. The Hilchos of the Gemara comes to the conclusion that Nogea is Asur, which means, like the second transmission of Chinina, that everybody, even Rav, agrees that if he has a direct contact between his heel, or for that matter, any part of his body and the Erva, that's Asur. He's not allowed to read Kriyat Shema, but Roeh Mutter. But we're going to accept Rav's opinion against Abaye that if there's no direct contact between the heel and his Erva, he's allowed to read Kriyat Shema. So this Gemara that we just learned is about Erva. We're going to have other Gemaras about Erva. But right now, for the foreseeable future, we're going to have to study Gemaras about Tsoa. Now, in the case of Tsoa, we have a parasha in the Torah with regard to a war situation that when we go out to battle and we need to use the facility, so to speak, then he has to go outside of the machna. And the pasuk also says v'chisiso, that he should cover the tzoa. That's called v'chisiso es tzeosecha, and that's in Parashas Ki Teitze. Now, what does it mean to cover the tzoa? The Torah says v'chisiso es tzeosecha. Is that halacha in the tzoa itself, meaning that the tzoa should be so carefully and hermetically sealed in such a way that you don't see the tzoa, it's out of sight, it's locked up, or is it enough that you put a kisui, again, when you talk about a kisui to cover the tzoa, does it have to be a permanent kisui? Could it be a transparent kisui? I mean, there's so many different questions you could ask about how to guarantee of a chisisa tzeos secha. And by the way, these halachas, although the Gemara explicitly addresses Kriyat Shema, would apply even to Divrei Kedusha, Divrei Torah. Omar Rava, Tzoa ba'ashashis. Ashashis is some sort of a glass container or glass receptacle. So he has the Tzoa covered by glass. Now there's a big chiddush here because the Tzoa is still visible. The glass is transparent. Now another way of learning Ashashis is what's called a cloth dot. Some sort of very thin, almost like a piece of paper or a parchment. Says Rav, it's still considered a kisui, even though it's transparent. Muta likros kriyat shma kenegda. And here we're going to have a distinction between tsoa and erva. And erva, when we say that you cover up the erva to read kriyat shma, it means it's covered in a way that you can't see the erva. So transparent covering would not do it. Although there is a halacha of mechitza, of chatzitza, for example, if let's say the previous sugi, the Gemara spoke about someone who's in a mikveh and his head is outside the mikveh, so that the top of the mikveh, the water that reaches his neck, becomes a chatzitza that's chotzitz between his head and the rest of his body. That's as if they're in two different makomos. But if the head and the erva are in the same location, there's no chatzitza between the two of them, then in order to cover the erva, you'd have to cover it in a way that you couldn't see it. It's no longer visible. And that's why he says, erva bashoshis. So if the erva is covered by some sort of a glass or see-through transparent covering, also likros kriyat shma kenegdi, he's not allowed to read kriyat shma because the erva is visible. And now the Gemara is going to try to explain, based on psukim, the difference between tsoa and ashishis, as to what constitutes a valid kisui. The Gemara says the following: Tzoa ba'shashis on chafeim and beis is mutal likros kriyat shma kenegda. You're allowed to read kriyat shma if it's covered. Why? The tzoa b'kisui talia milsa. As far as tzoa is concerned, what you need is a covering. And whatever constitutes halachically a covering, if it's called a kisui, there's some permanence to the kisui, then that's enough, even though you can still see the tzoa. And that's based on the pasuk of v'chisisa tzeosecha in the parasha Milchama, or mixia. And this hashoshis is considered a valid kisui. So therefore you fulfill the requirement of v'chisisa tzeosecha, and you're allowed to read kriyat shma kenegdo. Now, some of the Rishonim want to claim that the purpose of this kisui is to keep out the foul odor. And apparently, the fact that the glass is transparent is irrelevant. It's still in a closed box or shelf or so. It's so closed in such a way that it keeps out the smell. But the simple pshat is that we simply need a kisui to cover the tzoa. Once we cover the tzoa, then we are separated from the tzoa. We're allowed to read kriyat shma. However, erva, that's more complicated. Why? Erva bashashis also likros kriyat shma kenegda, because here the pasuk doesn't emphasize kisu in the case of erva, but rather v'lo yireh v'cha ervas davar omrachmana v'haka mischazia. He can see the erva. So even though the erva is absolutely covered with a valid kisu, a kisu such as if it was covering tzoa, you would be allowed to read kriyat shma, but in the case of the erva, since this kisui called ashoshes is transparent, therefore he is in violation, if he would read kriyat shma, of the pasuk lo yireh b'cha ervas davar. So again, in the case of tzoa, the main thrust is not whether you see or you don't see it, but whether it's exposed or it's covered. And if you have a case of a covering which was transparent, that would be no problem. As far as tzoa, you fulfill the requirement of a kisisa, but in the case of erva, it's not a matter of covering the erva in a what would constitute a legal covering, but rather it's got to be covered in a way that you don't see it. That's the additional requirement. Now, this would be very relevant, I think, in contemporary times, because unfortunately, in the lack of tzniyus in our generation, we see women who wear clothing that are see-through clothing. Or, for example, a woman coming out of a swimming pool, or different cases where, you know, the body could be seen despite the fact that it's officially covered. So if the covering is transparent, is see-through, then you would not be allowed to read Kriyat Shema because of Lo Yirah B'Chayavas Davar. Although maybe that kisi would be sufficient for covering a tzoa.
When we talk about erva, are we talking about the specific location, or how broad an area is covered?
Erva basically means any part of a woman's body that's normally covered. It's generally covered. Now, would that change from one society? Right. It's very possible. So, for example, Seir B'Isha Erva, the Gemara says, Tefach B'Isha Erva, the Gemara says that any part of the body that's normally covered. Now, what normally covered means, you'd have to go through the post.
So the Kisui of Kisui Adam, do we learn any package between the two? For Kisui Adam, that what we need, requirements for Kisui Adam.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. What would be if, let's say, you covered the Dam with something that's transparent? Would that be... But I think in the case of Kisui, I don't know if it says in the post, offer, you need offer.
No? Not only, but they can do, and they do sawdust and things, you know, like they do.
Right. But no, things so that aren't transparent. I don't know about ashishus. I don't know if you can give a kai kisya down with ashishus. But let's leave that question because we just go through this. Omar Abaye. Soa kolshu mevatla barok. Omar Rava barok ove. So here we have machlokas again between Abaye v'Rava. Until now, we saw that Abaye was the machmir. Here, Rabbi turns out to be the mekil. And Abaye holds that in the case of tzoa, then all you have to do to cover the tzoa is you have to put saliva, you have to spit on top of the tzoa. Now saliva is a very thin kind of covering. It can be easily blown away. It's not what you call something that has kviyas to it, but nevertheless Abaye says that's enough of a kisui to constitute a kisui. And therefore you'd be allowed to read Kriyat Shema. But Rava requires a much more permanent kind of kisui, which is called rok ove, which I guess in English would be called phlegm. And here again, we have two approaches in the poskim to explain what is going on in this sugya. And why is it that Rava objects to saliva, which is called rok, but he requires rok ove, which we said was lecha. And the Ritva's approach is that Rav is bothered by the fact that if you spit on something, then it still could be seen. You really haven't covered it. And he says that according to Rav, if let's say you were to cover Tsoa with transparent water, that would also not be sufficient. It would have, transparent water would be the same as saliva. But if, on the other hand, you had mayim achurim, which would be water that was mixed up with dirt and filth, and in such a way that it's dark water, that would be okay according to Rava. And there's a famous Magen Avraham who says that tzoa b'ashoshes, where we said it's mutal across Kriyat Shema, even though the ashoshes is transparent. Why is it that Rava objects to rok, and that's not considered a valid covering? Says the Magen Avraham, because ashoshes is permanent. You know, it's a piece of glass that is permanent in its place, or if it's covered on all sides, the tzoa is permanently covered. Of course, you can open the covering, but right now, status quo. But in the case of saliva, that's something that just comes and goes. That's according to the Magen Avraham. However, the Rimi Lunil, one of the Rishonim quoted in the Shita, he has a totally different explanation of this Gemara of Rav and Abaye. And it's all about the following question, whether kisui in tzoa requires getting rid of the smell of the tzoa. And that's what bothers Rava here about Abaye. Rava feels that rok dak, if it's not rok ove, is eno moil, Kidei limnoas reach hatzoah. It's not going to be sufficient to get rid of the smell of the tzoah. So in tzoah we have really two issues. We have the tzoah itself, and we have the smell, the odor that comes from the tzoah. Rama wants to solve, according to the Rimi Leniel, the problem of the smell. Whereas according to Magen Avraham and all those other than the Rimi Leniel, Rava's issue was to get a permanent kind of kisui. Now the Rimi Leniel is going to have an easy case with Ashoshis, because Ashoshis will definitely contain the odor. Amar Rava. Rava says the fine tzoa beguma. Let's say you have feces that's inside a hole below the ground level. Meniach sandolo aleha v'kori kriyachma. There's a pele v'chidush. He's just simply covering it with his foot. And here we're going to have a couple of issues. Issue number one is that doesn't seem to be a permanent covering. So the poskim want to explain that Rava holds that this is permanent because it's dependent upon your human decision. You'll decide whether you want to remove your foot or you want to keep it there, and therefore that's considered permanent insofar as, for at least for the time that you read Kriyat Shema, you have all the intention to keep your foot there. The other issue that the poskim deal with is what's called sandolo. Sandolo means that if he had a bare foot and he would cover the tzoah with his bare foot, that would not be sufficient, but rather he's got to cover it with his sandal. He's wearing some sort of a shoe or a sandal. And Rava's chiddush is, and this is something which the Mishnah Berurah spends a lot of time on, based on the Rosh here in Masechta Brachos, there's a concept called bittul. Bittul means that something that you wear, if it's tied down to your body and it's attached, even though it's a foreign substance, is batel legufa. And the issue here, because before Rava, the Hava Amina before Rava, was that if the sandal is attached to his ground, to his foot, and he wraps it around with straps, then the sandal is batel legufa, and then it becomes like the case of Yachef. Yachef means if with his bare foot he covers the hole on the top of the ground with his bare foot, and the tzoah inside the hole, that's not considered a kisui. Now this would be absolutely antithetical to what we discussed before, that is considered permanent insofar as he as a human being will decide one way or the other. In other words, in the case of saliva, as opposed to roke, other, there may be natural factors which will decide and determine whether the roke will remain on top of the tzoah, as opposed to a human being. But if we're talking about a human being, then what difference does it make whether he has a sandal or he has an open, bare foot? So somehow in the case of a bare foot, we are seeing a direct relationship between the tzoah, even though he's not in contact with the tzoah, the foot is not touching the tzoah, but between the tzoah and his foot. We need some sort of a separation between his body and the tzoah. And that can only be achieved by a sandal. But again, the big chiddush of Rav is that the sandal is not equal to his bare foot because it's not batel legufo. So basically, Rav is telling me two different chiddushim. One chiddush is that even though his entire body is on top of the tzoah, he's literally standing on the tzoah. The tzoah is subterranean, it's up above the ground, but he's standing on the tzoah. And the answer is, says Rava, since there's no touching, there's no contact between his body, his leg in this case, and the tzoah, then it's mutter. And the second chiddush of Rava is that this kisui, which covers the tzoah, even though it's not really permanent, and he's going to walk away just in 5 seconds or 5 minutes, that nevertheless, but right now, for this period of time in which he wants to recite Kriyat Shema, it's considered a kisui. It's like a permanent kisui. Now, one of the Rishonim, the Ra'ah, is quoted here in the footnote as saying the following, that if he would take a kli, some sort of utensil, and he would cover up the hole in which is tzoah, that would not be sufficient, because then we assume it's not in any way permanent. Somebody comes by, or the wind blows it, and that's it. As opposed to gufo, when he's wearing a sandal, in that case, he doesn't have, no one, unless somebody pushes him away physically, he has no intention of moving. So that gives it a temporary permanence, if you will. Fine. The Gemara now is a Sofe, boy, mar bereder avina, so a dvuka besandol mao. What happens if the sandal now has contact with the tzoa? So the tzoa is now dovuk in the sandal. We'll have to see if the word dovuk here has a very special meaning. Dovuk usually means a very tight, you know, clinging kind of situation. In any event, we're talking about a case where there's no reach ra coming from the tzoa, and now he is stepping on the tzoa in a way that there's direct contact between his shoe and the tzoa. And the Gemara doesn't have any answer. My, the Gemara has no final conclusion. It teku. This remains an outstanding suffix. So I mentioned before that there's an emphasis here about dvuka, the word dvuka. Before, we spoke about a case where you had soa baguma, and then there was no question in anyone's mind that he puts his foot down with the sandal on it, and there's no contact between his sandal and the tzoa. That's perfectly mut. But here, it's dvuka besandolo. Now, what does dvuka besandolo mean? Does it mean there's some sort of contact between the tzoa and his sandal? So if you take a look at the Rambam in Hilchos Kriyas from Perek Gimel, and the Rosh here in the third Perek of Brachos, the word dvuka is lav dafka, and you can cross out the word dvuka for all intents and purposes and replace it with the word negia, nogas. And nogas is enough. And the Mogen Avraham in Hilchos Kriyat Masimon Ayin Vav writes that the problem with soa when it's in contact with the sandal is because the sandal is bata lagufa. So again, if the sandal is bata lagufa, but there's no contact between the tzoa and the sandal, then you're allowed to read Krishma. The Gemara never had a doubt about that. But if, on the other hand, the sandal comes in contact with the direct contact with the tzoa, then it's considered tzoa al besaro. It's as if he has tzoa on besaro. So again, if you were studying the Magen Avraham in depth, you'd have to understand, when do you apply the din of sandal batal begufa? When do you not apply the din of sandal batal begufa? And why should it make any difference whether his sandal is touching direct contact with the tzoa? However, what I wanted to point out to you is that the Raven and Rabbeinu Yonah, they explain the Gemara that there's a fundamental difference between nogea and dvuka. And they say the following, that if the sandal only has a contact with the tzoa, then that's considered kisu. It's considered like the tzoa is covered, even though there's contact, but the sandal functions as a kisu, even though there's contact. However, our Gemara, the suffix of Mar Berei Deravina, is about a case of dvuka. Beofen shatsoa dvuka lesandolo, and therefore, since it's dvuka besandolo, it's not just negia, but actually there's a cohesion, so to speak, between the tzoa and his sandal. That's when it's considered as if his guf is in contact with the tzoa. Now we're back to the question about erva, and we said before that the pasuk says v'lo yira b'cha ervas dovar. Here's a very interesting Gemara. I find it a bit strange. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Oved Kochavim Arum. Are you allowed to read Kriyat Shema in the presence of a naked body that is not Jewish? And Rabbi Yehuda discovers America. Also Likros Kriyat Shema Kenegdo, that the naked body, it doesn't matter if it's a Jewish body or a non-Jewish body. So the Gemara says, "My iria oved kochav mafili Yisrael nami." Why does Rabbi Yehuda have to tell me that the guy's body is naked? I mean, it does make a bit of a difference whether it's a Jewish body that's naked or a non-Jewish body. So the Gemara answers, "Yisrael pshita le diosa." There was no question about it. Not a Jewish body. A Jewish body for sure comes under lo yirabacha ervas davar el ovei kochav itzrichle. The Gemara has a hava mina that the body of an ovei kochavim, even when it's naked, is not an erva. We're seeing clearly here, by the way, at least in this hava mina, that erva is not what you call a mitzius. You know, it's not just a physical, biological reality, but rather it's a chalushem. It's some sort of legal, halachic status that either X is called an erva or it's not called an erva. And that's what, Eric, you were asking me before, in the case of a woman's body, what exactly is an erva? So I told you that an area of her body that's normally covered is an erva. Now, what would be the havamina here without Rabbi Yehuda that the naked body of an Ovi Kochom doesn't constitute an erva? Again, in the halachic universe. Ma'udetem, I might have thought this is all based on a pasuk in Yechezkel. Ho, luksiv behu, with regard to the erva of a guy. And the pasuk there is referring to the Mitzrayim. It says, Asher besar chamorim besaram. The Torah, the Tanakh, compares the flesh of a non-Jew to that of an animal, and therefore Ema, I would think kechamor bi'almahu, like since the Torah calls the flesh of the Mitzrim besar chamorim, then in the presence of a chamor, I'm assuming that there's no tzor around, but in the presence of a chamor, a naked chamor, right? We're not waving the banner of the ASPCA that you have to cover the animals, right? But if the animals are naked, so then you're allowed to read Kriyat Shema. And the same thing, by extension, could apply to the erva, not of Behema, but also of an Akum, because of this equation between the Besar Akum and Besar Chamorim. It's called Mashmolan. That's what Rav Yudin wants to teach us, the Inu Nami Ikri Erva. Interesting. See, I would have said, if I were writing the Gemara, Kamash Malan, that I don't care one way or the other whether it's an Erev. If it's a naked body, I mean, you're not going to be able to concentrate on your Kriyat Shema. You'll end up with Hirhurim. I don't think there's any less Hirhurim in a Jewish body than in a non-Jewish body. I mean, one could argue this back and forth. But instead, the Gemara says, no, we're still within the framework of the Havamina. We have to know whether it's called by the Torah Erev or not. And here we have a parash in the Torah that calls the nakedness of a guy an erva, dechsiv, with regard to Noach and his sons, after he comes out of the Tevi, gets drunk, and the whole story there, vi ervas avim lo ro, right? That's not chum, that's shem v'yever, right? So they didn't see, shem v'yefes, excuse me, they didn't actually look at the erva of their father. Now Noach had a din of a guy, and yet the Torah calls his private parts erva. So you see that even the erva of a guy is called an erva, and Mimele, you're not allowed to read Kriyat Shema keneged the erva. So it's really interesting.
Very difficult Gemara to teach.
The Havamina is very difficult, yeah. You know, try to compare the body. But again, you have to... only if you're oriented in the halachic universe, you know, there's a status of an erva, you know. But if you talk about Hirhurim, then this Gemara makes no sense at all. Keep in mind that Noach is described as an ish tzaddik hayah, but he's still a guy. So you see that a guy could also be a tzaddik. Anyway, lo yiskasa lo b'mayim royim v'lo b'mei ha-mishra. The Mishnah says that if you're naked inside a body of water, then it depends, and you want to read Kriyat Shema, it depends on what the water is like. Meaning, if it's water that has a certain stench to it, it's foul water, it's mayim royim, which is called in Hebrew sruchim, and this is really foul water, or mei mishra. Mishra means that when they used to prepare flax in the manufacturing process, they used to soak it in water or canvas, and that would give it a bad odor, is then you're not allowed to read Kriyat Shema unless ad sheyatil lesochan mayim. Now, it's interesting. In the way we have the Mishnah, and the Gemara is going to really have a problem with this, what you have to do in this case of Mayim Royim or Mayim Mishra is you have to add clear, you know, healthy water into the mixture. And then you could ask, how much water do you have to add? Maybe you have to go through the laws of Bittul, maybe you need Bittul Barov. So the Gemara seems to be approaching the Mishnah from a straightforward way. Kama mayim romi viozil. How much water do you have to pour into this body of mayim royim, mayim mishra, in order to change its status, such that you can now read Kriyat Shema? And the probable answer will be that you need a lot of water. Because imagine how much water you have that's mayim srucha. I mean, his body is actually submerged in the water, so it must be a pretty serious amount of water. And if you want to now cancel that water through bitul by adding mayim tzonenim, you know, mayim tzlulim, I should say, you know, clear water, then it would have to be a heck of a lot of water. So the Gemara now reinterprets the Mishnah. And this is perhaps based on what we call chisurei metzer, you know, there's something missing in the Mishnah that was left out. Ella, but rather we have no choice. The Mepharshim say that the reason why we have no choice in interpreting the Mishnah is why can't we say in Achinami that he should pour in a large volume of water to be mevatel the water? So there's something called on the Mishnah, Tosfos Anshei Shem. He says that our Mishnah is talking about a case of Vasikin, and it's getting very close to Hanetzach Chacham, and he wants to very quickly read Kriyat Shema so that he can just get out of the mikveh, get dressed quickly, and say and recite his Amidah, synchronizing it with Hanetzach Chacham. So he's in a very pressured, urgent situation. It's hard to believe that he would have enough time to gather together such a massive amount of volume of water that it would be mevatel the water that he submerged in, which is Maimra and Maimishra. So therefore the Gemara is going to assume now that as far as that Mishnah is concerned, there's no way that he could read Kriyat Shema in that situation. He simply has no option. He's got to get out of there, take a shower, get dressed, and then recite Kriyat Shema. So what is this business that the Mishnah says, Achiyati l'tochan mayim, chol nupshat, hachi komar, lo yis kasa lo b'mayim roim v'lo b'mayim mishra klal. You know, he's not going to be able to get enough water to be mevatel the mayim roim mayim mishra. So forget it, my friend. Just get out of there and recite Kriyat Shema somewhere else. But meira glayim, now we're introducing a whole new piece to the Mishnah. And if he has Mei Raglayim, and here we're going to have a big machlokas, how much of a volume of Mei Raglayim, but let's assume he has a limited amount of Mei Raglayim. You know, we would say in Yiddish, gepisht ein mol. You know, he urinated one time. We're not talking about many people urinating in the same place. Let's just, again, for the argument's sake, let's just make that assumption, although not everyone would agree with that, but certainly many Rishonim would agree with that. So he has a limited amount of urine, and the urine is collected in a is it a urinal? It's called in English a vessel that so it's in the urinal, and he's not allowed to read Kriyat Shema in the presence of that urinal that has urine in it. Achiyati l'sochan mayim v'yikra. So now that there's a limited amount of urine there, it's, even if he's in a big rush and he has to, you know, he's pressing to read Kriyat Shema, he can add water, and he can add enough water to be mevatel it. And now we're going to discuss how much water does he have to add to the urine. Tana Rabbanu, we learned in the Braisa, Kama Yatil Sochan Mayim, and here we have machlokas between the Tanakama, who's Mekil, and Rav Zakai. Zakai is machmir. According to Tanakama, kol shehu, you know, this is just a formal action of a kind of a bittul, but it's not real bittul, because bittul always requires a rov. Kol shehu is not enough to create bittul. On the contrary, the mayim would be bittul in the meraglayim. And even Rabbi Zakai, basically, he also has some sort of formal action of pouring water into the urine in order to permit the recitation of Kriyat Shema, and it's only a revius. It's not rov, my friends. This is not rov. That's why a lot of Rishonim are going to say that it doesn't matter how much of a volume of urine is there. It still is only a formal action that was required. Now, in order to appreciate this, we need two introductory comments. One comment is, and this is based on a sugya earlier, that the Torah only prohibits urine as far as reciting Kriyat Shema, etc. When I say etc., I mean any Dovah Sheva Kedusha, Torah, is only when it's called Koleach. Koleach means there's a Kiluach, he's actually urinating. There's a flow of urine. At that moment in time, the Torah says, you're not allowed to read Kriyat Shema. But after the urination process has completed itself and the urine is collected now on the ground, then as far as the Torah law is concerned, you're allowed to read Kriyat Shema. The Rabbanan prohibited it. Even after the urine he's finished urinating and the urine is on the ground. And again, we always have to emphasize this, we're talking about a case of urine without a smell. You know, if there's a foul odor, there's nothing to talk about, then for sure it's asur. But we're talking about a case where there's no smell. And what do we have to do now if he has no choice, but he has to read Kriyat Shema at this moment in that place where there's urine collected in a kli? And here, since we're talking about urine that's not masrich and it doesn't have a foul odor, and we're talking about an isa derabanan, because as far as the Torah law is concerned, once he terminates his process of urination, there's no isa in the collected urine. Then the Rabbanan said, you know what? In an urgent situation, we're going to be mekil. We don't need to be mevatel the urine with mayim rabim, with a rov mayim. But we need either, as the Tanakhama would say, a mashu, or a revius as Rav Zakkai. That's the first introduction that I wanted to give. The second introduction is, why is the sheer revius here in this case? You know, immediately by association, I was thinking of, you know, kiddush for wine and all sorts of stuff like that. But the Chacham Tzvi has a better point, but again, for this you'd have to learn a famous sugi of Taras at the beginning of Pesachim, which is called Rav Chanina's Kan Kohanim. And there the Gemara says that if you have what's called machtin or tzinoros, those are small utensils that are made of metal and they contracted tumah, then believe it or not, you could be mitire them in a mikvah that only has a revius in it. That's pretty mind-boggling, right? We always talk about, you know, 40 saw. Here we're talking about a shear of revius. So ayin sham v'psachim yud zayin. And finally, the last introduction that I wanted to add here is a major machlokus between the Rambam and the Rashba. The Rambam says that you can only avail yourself of this option of a revius mayim, according to Rav Zakkai, in a case where one person urinated once. The Rashba says it doesn't matter how many times people have urinated in this kli, all you have to do is add a revius mayim. And the Rashba has a proof, which we don't have time for right this second, but let's just go on to finish up the Gemara. Omer Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman says, Machlokes lebasof, aval betchila kol shehen. Now the Gemara is going to have a machlokes on top of a machlokes. And this machlokes between Rav Nachman and Rav Yosef, and it's min hakotzel hakotzel, from one polar extreme to the other. And we're talking about the Tanakhama and Rav Zakkai, both of whom agree that you have to do some sort of formal, you know, legal act of bittul on this mei raglayim, whether it's kol shu by adding a little bit of water or it's a revius of water. But this is only a problem, says Rav Nachman, in a case where he started with the urine inside the kli, and now he wants to be mevatel. So now you need a real serious act of bittul. And again, it's not so serious because it's not rov mayim, but it's a formal act of bittul. Aval b'tchila, supposing he poured water into the kli itself was empty, and then he urinated in the kli. In this case, everybody, even Rav Zakkai, agrees that kol shein, all you need to be mevatel the meraglayim is to add a little bit more water. And I think what he's saying here is that since the kli initially was used for mayim, it doesn't have the same status here. It's already not a urinal, so to speak. It's a mitzas urinal. Again, you'd have to work out the details here. But in essence, what he's saying is that you can, according to Rav Zakkai, you can sandwich the mayim, you know, sandwich the urine in between mayim and mayim. So you started with mayim and you finished with mayim, and all that is just a culture. Now, if Yosef is going to go to the exact opposite extreme, he's going to say machlokes, the whole issue is lechatchila. If he started by putting water in the kli, then the Tanakhama has this gevaldige kula that all you need is to add mayim kol shehein. In other words, he started with a little bit of water, then he urinated into this vessel, and now he wants to be mevatel for kriyat shema. All he has to do is add a kol shehein. Aval lebasov, but let's say there was already meira glayim in the kli, and now he wants to be matel mayim besocho. Is the divya kol even according to the chacham and the Tanakhama revius? You really need a full revius. Amalei Rav Yosef l'shamei. Here's a story. Rav Yosef tells his second in command, Isi li revi isa de maya, bring me a revius mayim. I want to pour it into this kli, and later on the kli will be used for meira glayim. Kirav Zakkai. And this is a reflection of Rav Yosef's interpretation of Rav Zakkai, that according to Rav Zakkai, even if you started with water in the kli, you still have to add a revius. And that's called lechatchila, and lechatchila is the case where we have machlokes between Tanakama and Rav Zakkai, and Rav Yosef passes lechumah like Rav Zakkai. In a case of asof, then even the chachomim would agree that you have to add a revius. Tana Rabbanu, we learned in a braisa, graf shel re'i. So until now we've been talking about a urinal, now we're talking about a utensil that's designated for re'i, for feces. The ovid shel meraglayim, and we have this urinal that is designated for urine. Also likros kriyat shma kenegdam. The afal pisha ein b'hem klum. In other words, the kli itself becomes like tsoa. In other words, even though there's no tsoa now in the kli, but since this kli is designated for tsoa, therefore you're not allowed to read kriyat shma, and you're not allowed to read kriyat shma. But we'll see soon in the poskim, even if somewhere in the house, or I shouldn't say the house, because when the Gemara speaks about a bayis, the Gemara is talking about a cheder, a room. But anywhere, if there's anywhere in the room a urinal, even though there's no urine inside, or a kli that's miyuchad for tzoa, and there's no tzoa inside, then you're not allowed to read kriyat shma. However, the Brisa says, "Hachiyatil is sochan mayim." If you pour water into this urinal or into this kli, then you're allowed to read Kriyat Shema. "Kamiyatil is sochan mayim." How much? He has again a machlok between Tanakama and Rav Zakkai. Tanakama says kolshu, and Rav Zakkai requires a revius. So this is called a graf shel re'i or an ovid shel meraglayim. Rashi points out that generally speaking, back in the day, it was made of pottery, of earthenware. And a kli of that sort that's designated for tsoa is called a graf. And if it was designated for urine, it's called an avid. And now we have the possibility of ad sheyatil l'sochan mayim. Now I skipped a few words here, and I apologize for that. He says, "Afal pisha ein b'hem klum." So again, these kelim themselves, even though they're empty because they were designated as an avit, or in the case of ri'i, a graf, it's us. Oh, umeraglaim atzman. That's. I'm sorry, I missed those words when I was reading the Gemara before. You didn't yell and scream because you didn't want to embarrass me. But if there's meraglaim themselves, then you have this machlokes between Rav Zakkai and the Tanakam. Now, you might ask the following question. If meraglaim atzman require, according to Rav Zakkai, a revius, then what about the fact that this kli itself is an avot shel meraglayim? In the case of avot shel meraglayim, the brisa didn't differentiate between adding water or not adding water. It was totally irrelevant.
Adding water make it worse.
So Rashi answers that here we're talking about a case where only on a temporary basis he used a certain utensil to urinate. It was not a urinal as designated as such. If it was a urinal designated as such, then Rashi says, "Lo mo'il shiyatil l'socham mayim." You know, the kli itself is prohibited. It has a din of meraglayim, or in the case of graf, it has a din of tzoa, and there's no possibility of salvaging it through nesinas mayim. Nesinas mayim is only in the case where the kli was not designated for that purpose. It was only used for urine on a one-shot basis. And here we have Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah wants to say that the avot, or the graf, or vit, I should say, or the graf, has the status of a beis hakise. And a beis hakise, you're not allowed to read kriyat shma kineged a beis hakise, even if there's no odor. If there's an odor, then the reach ra itself is enough to generate an iser, but the beis hakise generates an iser even if ein bo reach, and you're not allowed to read kriyat shma kineged a beis hakise.
What does kineged mean?
Within 4 hours, probably. Again, that's also a sugya. I don't know if we're going to get to it today. And now we have the question of an avit. Avit is now being, so to speak, elevated to the status of a beis hakise. And therefore, even though there's no reach ra, and even if it's empty, nevertheless, you're not allowed to you're not allowed to read Kriyat Shema Kenegdim. Now all this is according to Rashi, Rabbi Yonah, the Rosh, and so forth. But Tosfos, Dira Masel Ubilvad, says Avol Begraf Efsha Deloma Hanimayim. He adds the word Efsha, which means that Tosfos is not sure about it. He thinks that if the Kli, even if it was Miyuchad, it was designated exclusively for urine or for feces, it could be, says Tosfos, that adding water would not help, meaning it could be that adding water would help. But all the other Rishonim assume that adding water would not help at all. Now we're going to go on in the Braisa, and we're going to talk more about these kalim, these utensils that were designated for either urine or feces, and the Issa to read Kriyat Shema Kenegdom, if these kalim are around. The Braisa says, Bein lifnei amita u'bein li'achra amita. According to Tanakama, it doesn't matter where these kalim are. What do I mean? You can have a situation where here's your bed, let's say, that's called a mita, and you're standing here. And the ovit is here, that's called lifnei amita, but you could also have a situation where the ovit, the urinal, is now behind the mita. And the mita has, you know, a frame and it has legs, in which case the mita itself could serve as a chatzitza, separating you from the keli, from this urinal, this avit. And this is going to be a machlokes chin Tanakama of Shimon. The Tanakama holds, it doesn't matter where this avit is, it's a din in the cheder, in the, what's called the bias in the Gemara's language. If it's anywhere in the bias, I don't care if there's a chatzitza, you're not allowed to read Kriyat Shema there. Big chumr. Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, it all depends. If it's lifnei amita, so you and the urinal are in the same close proximity, there's no hefsek between them, then it's also, but li'achra amita, if the mita now forms a hefsek separating you from the urinal, kore, then you're allowed to read Kriyat Shema, and you don't have to run away from this ovit. You don't have to be marchik, let's say, for example. Exactly how much you have to be marchik would mean, do you have to leave the room, or do you have to be marchik some sort of a distance? We're assuming right now that you have to leave the room. According to the Tanakama, we're not sure what would be the deal in a case where the mita's mafsekis. We know that you can't read Kriyat Shema. We know that he has to distance himself from this urinal. The question is, does he have to leave the room, or is it enough that he's marchik dalad amos? And the Ritva comes up with a real chumra. He says, according to Tanakama, li olam osu likros Kriyat Shema bi od elu v'beso. As long as these utensils are in his house, not allowed to read Kriyat Shema. Again, when he says a house, he means a cheder. Again, it's a different in lingo, and it's such a nafgamina. You know, they had one room house, so to speak. The Torah, on the other hand, assumes that according to Tanakama, you're not allowed to read Kriyat Shema in the case where the mita is mafsekes within Dalet Amos. But if you're marchik Dalet Amos, and the question is, from what point do you have to be marchik Dalet Amos, then it's okay. You can read Kriyat Shema even according to Tanakama. Okay, now, lifnei amita, but if there's no mafsik, then even Rav Shimon Gamliel holds eino kore. Avol marchik hu arba amos v'kore. According to Rav Shimon Gamliel, if there's no hefsek, there's no mita mafsika, then you have to be marchik arba amos. And the Ritva says, according to Tanakama, that won't help. Even in the case where the avit is behind the mita, you'd still have to leave the room. In other words, the Tanakama sees the room as one entity.
Rabbi
Shimon, you have to go?
No, I think we get there.
Yeah, we have to go. Rabbi Shimon Elazar, I'm going to just finish this. Afilu bias mea ama. Even if you have a house or a room that's 100 amas long, lo yikra, ad she yotziyam o ad she yanichem tachas hamita. So you either have to leave the house or you have to set up a hefsek. So we'll stop here at Iboilahu. And
this is getting later.